Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're digging into something that, okay, might not sound super glamorous, but it really affects how disputes get settled. We're talking about the recent updates to the American Arbitration Association's rules.
That's right. Specifically, the consumer arbitration rules and the employment workplace ones for 2024 and 2025.
Yeah, and think of this as a shortcut, really. Understanding these changes gives you a pretty good handle on where dispute resolution is heading.
Exactly. We've gone through the AAA's own summary of the rule changes that's our source here, and we're pulling out the, well, the most important bits, the interesting stuff, for anyone who might encounter arbitration.
So our mission today is pretty clear. Break down the key changes, talk about why they matter, and, you know, what the real-world impact might be for people and for companies.
Sounds good. Where should we start? Maybe the administrative side of things.
Yeah, let's do that. So on the admin front, what's jumped out at you?
Well, one of the first things is how the employment arbitration rules have broadened. They're now explicitly covering all workplace disputes.
All of them. So that includes things like independent contractor agreements.
Precisely. That's a big expansion. Before, well, the fee schedule might have applied to contractor cases,
right,
but they weren't always automatically under the full employment rules framework. Now it's clear.
Okay, that's quite significant, especially with, you know, how work is changing, more gig economy stuff.
Right. It brings needed clarity for that whole segment of the workforce.
So more standardization there if a dispute pops up. What else on the administrative side?
They've also sharpened the guidelines in both consumer and employment rules for when the AAA might actually decline to administer a case or even stop administering it partway through.
Ah, so more transparency about when they step back.
Yeah, gives everyone a clearer picture of the AAA's boundaries as an administrator.
And for businesses using arbitration clauses in consumer contracts, something about the registry?
Yes, the Consumer Clause Registry. The procedures for getting a clause registered are spelled out more clearly now. But here's the kicker. There's a new consequence if a business doesn't pay its fees, the admin fees, or the arbitrator's compensation.
Oh, what happened?
The AAA says it might refuse to administer future cases involving that business.
Wow, okay. That's got some teeth. Definitely an incentive for businesses to stay current on their arbitration bills.
You'd think so. It seems aimed at making sure the system doesn't get bogged down by non-payment issues.
Right. So those are sort of the foundational administrative tweaks. Let's shift gears now and talk about the process itself, the procedural changes.
Okay. A pretty important one is the automatic stay period. You know, when one party runs to court, maybe challenging the arbitration agreement itself.
Yeah, the arbitration pauses, right?
Right. That pause, that automatic stay, is now 90 days, standard across both consumer and employment cases.
90 days. How does that compare to before?
It's longer. It was 30 days in consumer cases, 60 in employment.
So why the change? Just giving courts more time.
That seems to be the logic. Give the courts a reasonable window to rule on those initial legal challenges before the arbitration clock really starts ticking. Avoids rushing the judges.
Makes sense. Avoids potential conflicts down the line. Okay, what about situations where maybe the same person files multiple claims based on the same contract?
Ah, yes. Case consolidation. The AAA now has the administrative power to bundle those together.
Oh, interesting. So if I file, say, three different claims, but they all stem from my employment agreement, the AAA can decide to handle them as one case.
Essentially, yes, administratively. It's about efficiency, really. If it's the same party, same contract, different claims, they can consolidate. Could save time, save money.
Efficiency, always good. Now, something that's changed everywhere is the move to virtual stuff. How's arbitration adapting?
Big change here. Virtual hearings are now the default.
The default in both consumer and employment.
Yep. Reflects reality, right? Everyone got used to Zoom and Teams during the pandemic. It offers flexibility, potentially lower costs.
But it's not mandatory. Like, yeah. Can you still ask for in-person?
Absolutely. Parties can agree to meet in person, or if they disagree, the arbitrator gets to decide the format.
Okay.
And interestingly, there was an earlier draft proposal that said the arbitrator would need to find an in-person hearing necessary for fairness.
Ah, a higher bar.
Right. But they actually removed that necessary language after getting public feedback. It seems they wanted to maintain flexibility there.
Good to know they listened to feedback. Speaking of proposals and feedback, wasn't there something about the documents-only limit in consumer cases?
Yes, exactly. They floated the idea of raising the threshold for the documents-only procedure where there's no formal hearing, just based on submitted documents from $25,000 up to $50,000.
Did that go through?
Nope. They decided against it after the comment period. So That simpler documents-only track still applies to consumer disputes up to $25,000.
Interesting. So they kept that threshold. What other procedural bits should we flag?
Let's see. Clearer rules on how lawyers withdraw from a case. That's in both sets of rules. Also, a name change. What used to be the Arbitration Management Conference is now called the Preliminary Hearing.
Just terminology or more to it?
A bit more structure, perhaps.
Hmm?
And the employment rules have now formally adopted specific procedures for that preliminary hearing stage, aiming for more consistency early on.
Got it. And any other tweaks specifically for consumer arbitration rules?
Yeah, a few more granular things.
Mm-hmm.
There's now a specific time frame for objecting if you don't like the proposed hearing location.
Useful.
The rules also clarify that, yes, the AAA case managers might contact parties individually sometimes during the process. Procedures for handling deposits are clearer.
Okay.
And there's a brand new rule that deals with appeals, but only if the original consumer contract actually included an appeals provision. It outlines how that appeal would work within the AAA structure.
That makes sense, providing a path if the contract allows it. Now, you mentioned something earlier that sounded quite significant, dedicated mediation procedures within the consumer rules.
Yes, this is a really interesting addition. It's all about making mediation more accessible, more streamlined, maybe less expensive for consumers.
How so? What are the key features?
Well, first off, if you've already filed for arbitration, there's no extra filing fee to try mediation under these new procedures.
That's a plus.
Definitely. And the mediator's rate is fixed $300 per hour. So predictable costs.
Okay.
And mirroring the arbitration change, virtual mediation is the default, unless everyone agrees otherwise.
Makes sense.
Plus, the mediator has discretion. They can limit the need for lengthy pre-mediation statements or even skip them to save time and cost. And the procedures themselves are written to be, you know, accessible, easy to understand.
Sounds like a genuine effort to make mediation a more practical first step or concurrent step for consumers.
I think so. It slots it in quite neatly.
Okay, good stuff. Let's pivot now to the arbitrators themselves. How do these updates affect their authority, their powers?
Right. So one area is when there's a fight about which arbitration agreement actually applies. Maybe there are conflicting versions.
Yeah, that can happen.
Initially, the AAA proposed a rule where they just default to using the agreement submitted by the person filing the case.
Hmm, seems a bit one-sided.
Others thought so too, apparently. Based on feedback, they changed it. Now, the AAA will first look at what both sides say, make an initial administrative determination.
Okay.
But, and this is key, that administrative decision is subject to the arbitrator's final say. The arbitrator ultimately decides which agreement controls the dispute.
Ah, okay. So the arbitrator gets the final word on the governing contract. That feels more balanced.
Agreed. Then there's information exchange, you know, discovery. The rules here have been reworked.
How so?
The emphasis now is really on protecting each party's ability to fairly present their case, their evidence, their defenses.
Yeah.
It's about finding that balance, enough information, but not letting it become, you know, overwhelming or abusive.
A perennial challenge in arbitration. And what about getting evidence? Do arbitrators have more explicit power now?
Yes, quite explicitly. Both rule sets now clearly state that arbitrators can issue subpoenas.
For witnesses and documents.
Correct. Compelling attendance and production of documents.
Yeah.
And another addition, they are now explicitly empowered to order depositions.
Depositions, too. Okay, that really strengthens their hand in getting the necessary testimony and evidence.
It does. Gives them more tools for a thorough process.
What happens after the award is issued? Any changes there?
Yes. Arbitrators can now modify or clarify an award.
On whose request?
Either on their own initiative, maybe they spot a clear typo or calculation error, or if a party requests it.
So a way to fix minor issues without a whole new appeal process.
Exactly. A more efficient way to handle potential ambiguities or clerical mistakes in the award itself.
Streamlines things a bit. I also saw a note about closing the hearing.
Right. A small procedural point, but clarified. A new rule gives the arbitrator up to 7 days after the hearing finishes to formally decide that the hearing record is closed. Just a bit of wiggle room there.
Okay. And rules around motions.
Yes. The rules governing how arbitrators decide on motions, including potentially case-ending dispositive motions, have also been revised and updated. More clarity there, too.
Makes sense. Now, what about confidentiality? That's often a big reason people choose arbitration.
It is. Both rule sets now have a specific rule addressing the arbitrator's role when there's a dispute about confidentiality.
So the arbitrator resolves those disputes.
Yes. And it's worth remembering, separate from these rules, the AAA already has a practice they publish redacted consumer and employment awards online.
Redacted meaning?
Meaning they remove the names and identifying details of the parties, but they often leave the arbitrator's name. They also publish quarterly stats about their caseload. So there's a degree of transparency already happening.
Right, balancing privacy with some public insight. Okay, were there any changes to arbitrator powers specifically in the employment rules?
Yes, a couple of notable ones. There's a new rule specifically spelling out the arbitrator's powers to enforce their awards, making sure the decisions stick.
Important for compliance.
Very. And also, the rules around emergency measures of protection, think temporary restraining orders or preliminary injunctions, sought quickly. Those have been revised and formally codified within the employment rules now.
Okay, more structure around emergency relief. And on the consumer side, any specific power updates?
Yes. One change involves disputes about moving a claim out of arbitration and into small claims court.
Ah, the small claims carve-out.
Right. If there's disagreement about whether a claim qualifies to be moved to small claims, that decision used to be made administratively by the AAA. Now it's the arbitrator who decides if the parties disagree.
Puts it in the arbitrator's hands. Interesting. Anything else consumer specific?
Yes. A new rule explicitly gives consumer arbitrators the power to impose sanctions on a party.
Sanctions. For what kind of behavior?
For inappropriate conduct during the arbitration, delaying tactics, not complying with orders, that sort of thing. Gives the arbitrator more control over the process integrity.
So summing up these changes to arbitrator authority, it really looks like the goal was clearer guidelines, more explicit powers, basically equipping arbitrators to manage the process effectively and fairly.
I think that's exactly right. If you look at the big picture across all these updates, admin, procedural, arbitrator authority, the themes that keep popping up are, well, modernization.
Like the virtual hearings.
Right. And enhanced clarity, making rules easier to grasp, a definite focus on fairness, trying to improve efficiency at various points, and greater accessibility, especially with those new consumer mediation procedures.
It really does feel like a pretty thorough overhaul, reflecting, you know, practical experience and feedback.
Absolutely. And the AAA themselves have said they appreciate the input they got from stakeholders during the revision process.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was quite a collaborative effort to get these rules updated.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, it's clear these aren't just minor tweaks. They signal a real evolution in how consumer and employment disputes are going to be handled through the AAA framework. Which leads to the final thought, really. Considering all these changes, the move towards virtual, the clearer arbitrator powers, the new mediation options, how might this changing landscape shape how individuals and businesses even think about dispute resolution going forward?
Yeah, what new strategies or considerations might pop up because of these more modern, clarified rules?
It's definitely something to mull over. And of course, if you want the full detailed picture, the complete text of the updated rules is up on the AAA website. That's www.adr.org.
Worth a look if you're likely to be involved in arbitration.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive.